Hi, welcome back to the Incidental Economist Podcast. We've taken a bit of a break with the holidays, but we're back. This is Aaron Carroll.
This is Austin Fracht.
And today we're going to be talking about electronic medical records or electronic health records or whatever they happen to be called these days.
Yeah, that's a great place to start. I've heard of electronic medical records. I've heard of electronic health records. I've heard of personal health records. Is there another term that's related to
if you want to keep going up with rehos and well, everything else, and then regional, yes, but I you know what, it's funny because I know exactly what you're talking about, because I get sort of trapped up in this all the time and I actually get quite frustrated with it. I think that the difference between an electronic medical record and an electronic health record is somewhat semantic. Electronic medical records were around first, and that was very hospital based, and then eventually it moved out into offices, but it was still very much around the idea that it was the doctor's office. I think, say, calling it electronic health record tries to make it a little bit more holistic and talk about things that perhaps aren't necessarily medical in terms of your labs and your radiology scans and everything else. It can also be your, smoking history. It can be your social history, your family history, things that you do every day that might not be in the medical record but will be part of the health record.
That's amazing, because that distinction, maybe to other people too, but that distinction is meaningless to me. I almost can't.
I think it's meaningless to most of us. Yeah. It's sort of one of those buzzwords, though, that people in the industry, like to use to test people and see if you're in the know. I know we're going to get off on a tangent here, but a couple of years ago, they decided that overweight was going to be a noun in the obesity world, that we were going to have a new classification, that it would no longer be an adjective. You could be obese, but you could also be, we could say overweight is increasing. And I would always stare at people that doesn't make any sense. But it was sort of that buzzword. It was the shibboleth by which they could determine if you were in the know.
Oh, I see.
I think it's the same thing with EHR. But with personal health records, those are slightly different. Those are usually meant to talk about records that are managed by individual people, or actually, accessed or mostly controlled by individuals. So in other words, you're responsible for the collation of data all across the spectrum and all your clinicians and all your health, as opposed to the medical field being responsible. And so at least the difference in a PHR and an EHR is reasonably significant in terms of that is a real difference. We talk about the Google record or the Microsoft
record.
Yeah, that
makes sense to me. I even,
those are personal health records.
Yeah, I actually enrolled in the Google Health record thing, but I never did anything with it, and now it's gone. So I have
I think your experience is probably very common, because one of my gripes with these things is that it's incredibly difficult for the average consumer to be responsible or invested enough to manage this kind of stuff. And so it sounds great, and you'll probably sign up even perhaps a couple million people, but a very, very, very tiny percentage of the 300 plus million people in the United States, and it's very likely to be skewed towards the people that need it the least.
I'll tell you what it was for me. I think it was possible, or at least it seems like it might be possible, to link it up with my insurer and have it populated with a whole bunch of whatever data they have.
Uh-huh.
And I surprised myself. I'm usually not really that overly concerned about privacy issues. I'm concerned, but it's not as big an issue for me as for many other people. But I did not hit go on that. I was just I'm just not sure I want to go there.
Yeah, but this is the thing. It's even if it links to your insurer, you're going to get billing data.
Yeah,
I know. Your insurer doesn't have your medical data. They don't have your lab values.
Yeah,
they
I
don't
know.
Have your doctor's notes. They just have your billing data, which is almost, as you and I know, having done this kind of research, the worst kind of data.
Yeah.
By which to actually track what's actually going on in the world. Administrative data is usually pretty crappy.
Well, I tell you what it would have been helpful for is when I have to choose a health plan, and I have several options. I'm in the FEHBP, Federal Health Benefits Plan system. And when it's time to make my annual selection, I have options that are high deductible plans and different copays and so forth. And I don't really have a good sense of what my family's medical use is. I can make some guesses, and of course I get the bills and the EOBs, and I can look at all that. But did we spend $2,000 on healthcare last year or $800? I don't know. So It would have been nice to have that all kind of in one electronic place for me, but I just didn't do it. Anyway, what I really want to get into is there are some provisions in the health reform law for encouraging additional use and implementation of electronic medical records. Is that right?
In fact, ironically enough, and this is what I think a lot of people don't get, a lot of it's not in...
it's not?
It's not in the ACA. It's from the Stimulus Act.
Oh, right.
I think ARRA. ARRA is what's established the High Tech Act and the near $1 billion or whatever it is, and how much, God knows how much money being pumped towards physicians as incentives. A lot of that has nothing to do with Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, we're going to call it. Even if they were to repeal it, this stuff still exists.
I see.
And so I think it's going to happen, a lot of it, no matter what.
Well, so there's this pretty pervasive notion that we ought to be, getting away from written records and we should go to electronic systems and have them, work as well as possible with each other and be portable and what have you. And is that a good thing?
See, ironically enough, I think what you're describing is what everybody wants. I'm sort of bearish on the High Tech Act. And this is what, I mean, first of all, full disclosure, I do most of my funded research on information technology. And what I do for a living, trying to build and study information systems comprises a significant part of what I do. And I think that, having said that, so I'm you're preaching to the choir. I think that, clinical decision support, big information systems, electronic health records, I think these have enormous potential to improve the way that we practice and deliver medicine. I think it has, real potential to try and streamline things. I just think we go about this so badly. And I think that the High Tech Act, you hit the nail on the head. The things we want are for these systems to be in place, for data not to have to be repeated, for the systems, therefore, to talk to each other seamlessly so that your information can get to where you need it, the moment you need it. This is what we want. But what we're doing is just encouraging lots of physicians and practices and hospitals to go out and buy EMRs. And those don't do the same thing. And I've one of my soapboxes that I get on all the time is I think the biggest problem with data stored in the United States is that we truly have a lack of mandated standards. That we don't force the medical data to be stored. I don't care how you get it in. I don't care what you do with it when you have it. That should be where everybody competes. But the language that we use, how the data is stored, essentially has to be the same, because the way the world works right now is, if my office buys, company X's information system, and the hospital next door buys company Y's information system, there's no way for the data to go up and back. It may as well not exist. And so if you go to an emergency room or to a specialist, and they don't have the exact same system tied into the exact same network, that data will never get from one place to the other. And so it doesn't matter, that we have an electronic medical record. If we can't share the data, we can't actually do anything with it across the board. And when we talk about we want integrated care and people talking to each other and affordable, accountable care, they have to have ways of data going up and back, and you have to have the ability to move it if you decide to change doctors.
Well, that's obviously a huge problem. And if these data systems can't communicate across the various doctors and hospitals a patient might visit, does that mean we're really just wasting a lot of money on these things?
Potentially, yes. Not only that, it's important to remember that it's in the company's best interest that their systems don't talk to each other. Because if I'm company A and you buy my pharmacy basic, billing system, let's say, I want you to have to buy my radiology system. I want it to make it so you can't buy somebody else's. I want to make it so that you have to buy my dictation system. I want it to be that if you expand offices, you have to continue to buy my stuff, because if you can just plug it into everybody else's, then I'm costing myself business. So it has been the incentive to make communication as difficult as possible across systems. And so what they're doing right now is basically encouraging doctors' offices, encouraging hospitals to buy health records that achieve what we call meaningful use. And meaningful use, for the most part, comes down to sort of intra-system things that we're recording certain data, we're streamlining certain processes, we're making certain prescriptions and billing all electronic. We're trying to make you buy a comprehensive system for your clinic. But there's really very little that requires that it can talk to the doctor across the street or across the state or anybody else. There's very little that they can do to mandate, or I shouldn't say, there's very little that they are doing to mandate that the systems can communicate with each other. And if it was my law and my policy, if I was king of the world, that would have been number one in meaningful use. That you could do anything you want inside your system, but there has to be a way to push a button, one button, and then have all the data exported in some universally accepted format that could be instantly read into somebody else's EMR, and that all systems would have to be able to export and import into that format as just a basic tenet. But they didn't do that.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I work in the Department of Veterans Affairs, and it has it's the largest integrated health system in the U.S., and it has an electronic medical record, electronic medical system that can communicate across the whole system nationwide. And it's free. It's open access free, and the VA makes it available to any health system that wants to use it. And I learned something very interesting recently from Steve Parente. I have not been able to, unfortunately, track down the paper or talk from which he got it, although he did email me the information, and I'm working on it. But he said, guess who has adopted the VA system nationwide?
Is it going to be Canada?
No, it's no. China.
Okay, well, see, it's funny you say this because I don't doubt this because, again, it's like if your goal is to have widespread communication, this is a way to do it. We have built, for instance, total disclosure, this is part of where we do our research. We've built a very comprehensive system to do a pretty sophisticated clinical decision support and a basic EMR for kids, and that's what we do all our research on. And it is open source. And it is built on an open source EMR. And you could go and download the whole thing today if you wanted to. You could install this. And the place it's being used most widely right now is Kenya.
Wow.
Because there's a huge run where a lot of these developing countries want to have, widespread electronic medical records. And there are these open source EMRs that exist. And they're putting them across countries. I think Uganda's working on this. There's lots of developing nations that are picking this stuff and moving it on. And give them a couple of years, they're going to have a much better functioning information system across their country than the United States has right now.
Yeah, well, China already does.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And again, it's like companies should be competing on, how you get the data in, how you manipulate it, how complex is your clinical decision support, how good is the interface, what's the user experience? Like, that's phenomenal. They should be competing on that. I'm all for that. But how the data is stored and transmitted, it just seems to me like that's where government could get involved. Like, do with ever what you want inside, but there has to be a way to export it and import it in a very standard format that everybody accepts so that you can pick up your data and move it and so that we can get it across these systems. That's what we need. We need the communication.
Well, that's the basic concept of shaping the market with smart regulation that harnesses competition in dimensions that you want it, which is exactly what you just said, and cuts out dimensions where it's actually harmful competition. It's helpful to the companies to make a buck, but it's not increasing general welfare. There's another angle to this I want to get to, and it's apart from the interoperability issues, although that would probably enhance this. I'm wondering what an EMR system does for a practice or a hospital in terms of its own internal efficiency. Can it actually, cut down on, the staff they would otherwise need for record keeping or searching? How do actual physicians use it? Will they be able to use it to search someone's record on, for statistics and vital signs and so forth over a history to say, now that I can do this more easily, I see that you've got, your cholesterol has been creeping up and it's now an issue, and maybe they wouldn't so easily see that if they've got to page through paper records. So those kinds of things. Does it really enhance, efficiency and patient care?
Well, those are the goals, and that's exactly what everybody, thinks they're going to get to. The problem is that they don't seem to do it nearly as well as you think they would. And so, again, there's been tons of research on this. And so it's not like we don't understand why we need to do that. There's really good research showing that, just the fact if a doctor documents, an abnormal mammogram, patients are much more likely to comply. and to actually get the follow-up. That if there's good documentation, we could theoretically improve the timeliness of, you know, whether specialists get it, you know, whether how long it takes to get, you know, good management of a chronic disease. There's lots of potential for improvement, but, you know, we don't do so well. So, like, you know, alerts for vaccinations, alerts for, you know, you need to get anemia screening or following up with diabetes works really well, but doesn't seem to work as well for, like, asthma and management of heart disease or heart failure or depression. And so there's been a lot of issues there. You know, the idea that we could cut down on medication errors seems to be where everybody had originally focused. And, you know, the idea that we could, you know, catch things. But it turns out that human involvement is still a problem. And, you know, the way it's sold to physicians usually is that, you know, we can increase your billing revenue because by, like, you know, auto-populating fields, we can increase what you can code for visits. We can capture charges. There'll be fewer errors. And they say you'll get a ton of extra money for doing the same work, which sounds great to doctors, but we should recognize that from a healthcare system perspective, that's terrible because without doing any more work or any more good, doctors can now bill more. And so the system will cost more without one single improvement in terms of what's actually going on in terms of care. But, you know, again, and they often sell it as like, we'll make your productivity. So, you know, there was a good study in Health Affairs, like, God, 5 or 6 years ago, where they looked at how worker productivity changed in terms of implementing a good EMR. And they found that, yes, they were able to convert some office visits to telephone, which saved them a certain percentage of time. But it turns out the documentation time went up like 20%. Because actually documenting on the computer took longer. And to order, and the amount of time it took to place an order doubled almost because it was much harder. So you save some time here, but you increase some time there. And lots of studies across the board just show there's a lot of negative results and there's a lot of neutral results and there's a lot of mixed positive results. There was another great study in Health Affairs, I think it was only last year, which talked about, you know, it was a meta-analysis or at least a systematic review of all the studies that have looked at electronic health records. And they showed that, you know, the number of study outcomes and how many were purely positive isn't nearly as high as you'd think. And that we really don't get a lot of the benefits that you would think. Now, the idea is, and what they're trying to push with meaningful use is that a lot of it has to do with the things you're talking about. It's like, I need a way to say, who in my clinic has diabetes? And can I check, have all of them received a hemoglobin A1C in the last, say, 3 months, which I want them to do? And I can see who hasn't had it, and theoretically I could contact those people. You know, the sort of across-the-board improvements in how we're going to improve health, they're just not materializing like we'd want them to. And again, without the communication, without the knowing that these values are going to get into the electronic health record, a lot of the things that we promise that the EHRs are going to do just may not. I'm truly a bit cynical about all this. I think that in the end, with the High Tech Act, we may spend a ton of money, force a lot of doctors to buy systems that they won't like, and then come a number of years from now, a lot of them are going to want to ditch it. And it's a huge upfront investment. You know, they you know, even the most optimistic recommendations think it would take at least 5-6 years probably to recoup the investment if everything goes well for an EHR. That's a lot of money and a lot of time for doctors to try to invest, especially when the economy is so bad.
Yeah, do you have any idea what these packages cost, even like a basic package?
Well, I mean, it depends if you're talking about a hospital or anything else, but I mean, we're talking usually hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, you know, it's these things are not cheap. And for a robust one, you know, when a hospital buys one, we're talking tens of millions of dollars, if not all the way up to $100 million.
Are they actually that complicated? What's going on in there? That why is it costing?
It's so much of it is the networking, it's the interfacing, it's all the terminals and however, and the constant technical support. Because of course, when they come, you know, they sell all these bells and whistles. Oh, you're going to be able to make it, you know, to customize it to every physician, and you'll have order templates, and everyone's going to love it. And of course, that never happens, and it's so much harder than you thought it was going to be. And you realize that you need an incredible level of sophistication in order to create those order templates, and every doctor wants something different. And so you spend, you know, tons of time and people's salaries trying to get these things to work, and a lot of the stuff is proprietary, and it's incredibly complicated. And we you know, I work at Indiana University, where we have two basic big health systems. One is what we call Indiana University Health, which is, you know, to some extent the one associated with the university. We also have the what we call the Wishart Health System, although that's changing, which is the community health system. That has been using what's known as the Regenstrief Medical Record, which is an entirely homegrown electronic medical record. Was one of the first ever developed in like the 60s. And we've been using that. It's like runs on faxes. I mean, it's incredibly old, for decades. And they've recently been trying even to change it to more updated hardware because faxes are really out of date. And it turns out that, I'm not going to name names, but even the most sophisticated databases that we can buy out there on incredibly good servers don't work as fast as the original programming on the VAXs, because they were specifically written and streamlined to work for exactly this. And the system's phenomenal. And the doctors, for the most part, really like it. And it's all over the city in terms of this. And it's this homegrown 45-year-old system that's built with like twigs and baling wire. And it works so well. And the other side, they've bought multiple huge, expensive information systems. The doctors continually hate them, and it feels like every 5 to 10 years they scrap it and start over.
I'd like to know. I don't know what reason an office or a hospital would not just take one of these open source systems. Or maybe they're not as good in some way, or maybe they don't come
with
the tech support.
They're scary. Because there's no customer support. There's no tech that you can call and say like, "Oh my God, it's not working. Come fix it."
Seems like a real big opportunity for some firm just to support the free open source EMR system.
That's I could not agree with you more. And we've toyed with the idea.
It would be cheaper. Right?
I agree, and it seems like there should be huge opportunity. I've spoken even at sort of like technology conference things where I've talked to vendors and I'm like, there's monstrous opportunities here. You know, I just don't understand. I mean, you know, first of all, I'm sure that for right now, IT consulting must be huge because they have to advise, you know, doctors and hospitals on buying the systems right now. But there would seem to be a serious market for just being able to install and support some sort of open source EMR. But, you know, it still is a little bit of the Wild West out there in terms of figuring it out. I would imagine the VA one is pretty robust and developed. You would think there would be a way or to support, you know, and pay for that. Sometimes health policy baffles me. I just can't figure out how this all works the way it does, because there would seem to be better solutions out there that would be cheaper, but we choose not to take them because they're somehow affiliated with government. Or because perhaps we believe that something that's free can't be of value. I just don't know.
Yeah. Well, sometimes a dedicated sales force makes all the difference, and there probably isn't one for the VA.
Absolutely.
Although, a company that supports the VA could serve to sell have a marketing arm.
Yeah, but you know what, as I'm talking about this, it's like this is the pharmaceutical industry is the same way. It's like, you know, they can convince a population that you have to take a much more expensive, exact same molecule pill, you know, when all logic and reason would say, that's the exact same molecule, I could take it over there for much less money, but I've been convinced that I need this one, even though it costs more and does no better.
Yeah, well, it's purple.
Yeah, well, there you go. I was trying not to be specific, but you brought me up.
All right, we
should probably wind up.
You've thoroughly depressed me on electronic medical records. It doesn't sound like there's all that much to hope for. And you've also reminded me that I actually wrote a post on this. I think it hit some of the literature you mentioned, so I'll put that on the podcast post when we put this up. At the moment, I don't have any other questions, mostly because I just don't want to get more depressed.
Well, this is just one of those things where I'm amazed that like every 5 years, and I haven't been doing this that long, you know, I've been in computers, whatever, but you know, I've been out of fellowship or residency for, you know, 10 plus 15 years, let's say. But every few years, somebody's like, how can it be that, you know, we have had blah, 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 and IT and health is still so bad, and we don't do anything different other than just throw money at the problem and then expect that everything is going to get better. And it just doesn't. This is my personal belief, but I believe until we sort of nail down, you know, and make some regulations about the standards, that we will continue to have very siloed systems and not make significant progress. But that's me.
Well, I'm sure you're right, but I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep working to change it. That's what we do.
We should probably wrap it up.
Yep. Thank you very much for listening. This is the Incidental Economist podcast, and we will see you next week.